Hello, Sophia here. I'm wondering if you've ever been curious about what it's like to work with a fashion stylist, or what a sex club is like for someone in a fat body, or what are the weight neutral approaches to PCOS treatment, or what I thought about the Aubrey Gordon Your Fat Friend film. Well, over on the Fat Joy newsletter, I am sharing these personal stories and practical strategies for living in our diet culture world. When you subscribe for free, you'll get an email from me about twice per month. I'm also recording video conversations with incredible fat people as well as amazing fat allies. And I want to share these people with you. So if you want some more Fat Joy, please go to fatjoy.substack.com. That is Fatjoy, FATJOY, dot Substack, SUBSTACK.com. And subscribe to get all of this Fat Joy goodness in your inbox. Okay. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome to the Fat Joy podcast, where we talk each week about how to flourish in an anti-fat world. I'm Sophia Apostle, a fat professional coach who loves talking to other fat people about what it's like to live within oppressive systems that marginalize our bodies and how we still dare to have the audacity and courage to reach towards our collective liberation and embrace our joy. Please know this is an adult content podcast, so there will be swears. We will be talking about harms we've experienced, and we will be rebelling against weight stigma, diet culture, fat phobia, ableism, racism, etc. You can get more Fat Joy goodness, including how you can support the podcast through my newsletter at fatjoy.substack.com. And for episode transcripts, book reviews, and show notes, head to the Fat Joy website at fatjoy.life. I am so glad you're here. Enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome back to the Fat Joy podcast. I'm Sophia, and joining me today is Dr. Teresa Melito Connors. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Sophia. Hi, friends.
I'm so happy you're here, Teresa. As with so many of my guests, I found you on Instagram. You are under Dr. MC, and you were doing some really cool content that caught my eye around self-care, and just you do something called the Self-Care Cabaret, which is very cool. So thank you for being here, and I'm so excited for you to like share what you do with everyone who is listening and watching.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much. Gotta love social media when it works like in our favor, right? Sometimes it's a disaster, but it does have some cool redeeming qualities too. But yeah, so thank you so much. I'm Teresa Melito Connors, or Dr. MC. I started in 2019. I launched Dr. MC's Self-Care Cabaret, which was really in response to my own lived experience and my own journey with understanding and learning what self-care is as a means to avoid burning out in a really intense job as a helping professional. I work in education, and to just kind of share my expertise and my knowledge with the world is my hope. We have a small community now, but we're growing. But I decided to, as I was, I guess, working on my dissertation, I was like, you know, I want to just share this out. Let's just start a little Facebook page. So that little Facebook page of inspirational quotes quickly grew and became a website, a blog, a podcast, probably, God, we got to be close to 300 presentations on various aspects of self-care at this point. Self-care, trauma recovery, growth mindset, topics like that. I'm also in recovery for multiple eating disorders. And I work as a special education administrator in the greater Boston, Massachusetts area, in addition to my Dr. MC work. So I'm busy.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think I realized the breadth of what you do. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, thank you.
The second question is always about fatness, but before I go there, I want to ask you, how do you balance on that? How do you still privilege self-care with all that going on?
Yeah, some days are better than others. I definitely strive to practice self-compassion, and I am painfully organized. So my mom used to call me her little palm pilot because my mother's not necessarily super organized. She gets it done, but in a very more creative, artsy way. And I'm creative and artsy also, but in a different way. And I'm very organized. So I will literally schedule in tasks and schedule in self-care. And I think that that's more than fine to do, especially when you're super busy, as a lot of us are. I mean, there's a lot of people with side hustles, a lot of people with a lot of responsibilities. And just as a society, we run around crazy from one task to the next.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I schedule it too. And I often talk to clients about setting up, like looking forward strategically. And if there's going to be a busy time, like building in some scaffolding support, some like self-care time, some days off, or even like a 2-hour off or a half day. I mean, yeah, I think I feel like this idea of like spontaneous self-care sounds lovely, but I don't know. It doesn't work in my life either. I also have to schedule it and schedule forward, because when I'm in it, when I'm busy and in it, I won't do it.
Yeah. Well, it's the first thing that goes out the window. And I think it depends, you know, it's taken a long time to get to the point where I'm okay with giving myself permission to rest or to say no, and set those clear boundaries. I was even, you know, a couple weeks ago, I came home from a gig. I had a presentation in the morning and I was home in the afternoon. And I was home a little early than normal. So I'm like, oh, I got to get X, Y, and Z done. I'm going to start recording my classes. I'm going to do that. But first, I'm just going to lay down for like 10 minutes. Yeah. About 3 hours went by and I woke up and I was like, okay. And I just kind of shrugged it off. I didn't beat myself up about not getting everything done that I had hoped. I knew that my body in that moment needed some rest, and there was more than okay to have that permission and to do that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, it's taken me a long time to get to that point too. And for me, what really helped was really learning a little bit more about toxic productivity culture. And I feel like Trisha Hersey has done such a great job with rest is resistance, like that whole message that she has with Nap Ministry, which is on Instagram. It was the first time I think I'd ever been exposed to the idea that rest was more than just like, okay, that actually you should proactively build it into your life. I'd never thought of that before. Prioritize it. Like, that was just never part of the way that I grew up. I don't feel like we're really taught that as a culture generally. It's very counter to extractive capitalism. Why would we be allowed rest? No, you work, you produce, right?
No, and what are you celebrated for? You're celebrated for those times where you're like, oh, I burned in the candle at both ends, or pulled an all-nighter. Listen, I have a doctorate and I don't think I've ever pulled an all-nighter, because I've always needed my sleep and I've always managed to prioritize it. And it's just so bad for us when we don't sleep is like one of my top domains of self-care.
Yes, yes. Oh, okay. We're going to dive so into it, because I know you have like 10 domains that you're going to like take us through. But before that, let's talk about the word fat. How has this word shown up in your life? What's been your journey with this word?
Yeah, it's a complicated journey with it, I would say. And in recent years, since I started my recovery journey for multiple eating disorders about 8 years ago now at this point. And it's only probably been the last couple that I've really been okay using the word fat as a descriptor of myself, or even just saying it like to other people, or even saying it out loud, or I don't know. It's just taking that power away from that word has actually been really powerful for myself in my healing journey, and almost felt like a leveling up, like the day I was willing to use it and be okay with it. And, you know, so I have very deep rooted, weight issues in my family. Everyone in my family has struggled with weight to some degree. So much so to the point my dad at one point was 700 pounds. And, you know, and I would watch him do crazy diets, crazy fad diets, liquid shakes, and all those things as a means like to not stay at that weight. And then I would watch him gain the weight and then some every time. And then I watched my mom do the same thing. But for me, I grew up in a thin body. It wasn't until I was about 17 where all of a sudden, I don't know, hormones, whatever thing, life, I had gained a little weight over the summer and was going into senior year of high school with my pants not fitting how I wanted them to, shall we say. And of course, I immediately like panicked and was like, oh my God. And I was by no means even fat at this point, but I was, I remember that like panic about it. And that actually started my first introduction to dieting for myself. And I actually remember like my dad giving me advice on like how to diet and, you know, those early restricting behaviors. And I grew up dancing since I was 3 and performing, which probably always, you know, kept me thinner or whatever. But, you know, I was always a very active kid and it's just whatever. So that weight, though, really melted off super quickly. Which, yay for youthful metabolism. The next time, though, it came back, and then I'd lose it again. And it come back, and I'd lose it again. And every time, same thing, a little bit more would come back, a little bit more, and then I would just keep turning the screws tighter and tighter into really restrictive behaviors and various purging methods, as well as over-exercising, because somewhere along the way, I decided or internalized the idea that movement burns calories, which, sure, but it should be used as a means to burn calories. And that's really where things got twisted up for me, because growing up as a dancer, I love to dance. I love to perform. I love to be on stage, and I always have and always will. But once that got kind of twisted up in the eating disorder voice and the eating disorder behavior, I actually lost that joy in movement. And it has taken, I've recently reclaimed that space for myself and am working towards continuing to reclaim that and strengthen that relationship again for myself, not for anybody else. But that has kind of, so the word fatness has just a lot of meaning. And I would have said to you previously a lot of pain and fear behind it. And now I can see the strength behind it, at least for myself. And I strive to help others also kind of, you know, own it and find the joy in it and find the joy in just living. And bodies are supposed to be different and bodies change. And I think the world would be really boring if we all looked the same and we're all the same size.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Wow. Such a powerful story, Teresa. I really relate to a lot of it, having grown up as an athlete and not in a body. Like I felt like I was fat, but I wasn't. Like when I look up at pictures, I was like a size, I don't know, probably like a size 12 or 14. And then it was the weight cycling that really did it for me. I, you know, lose 80 pounds, gain 100, lose 100, gain 120. Like it was just so predictable. Like all the research shows and that, you know, diet culture tries to erase. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we now understand that I always say like biology wins in the end. Like I tried everything I could do. And, you know, it got really bad around the time about 8 years ago or so leading up to my wedding. So it was about 10 years ago leading up to my wedding. And because I just couldn't fathom the idea of being, in my head, a fat bride. Like nothing was worse to me in my twisted thought process at that time. And so I really went all in. And hid it from my now husband, hid it from my mom, who I'm super close to, and my friends closest to me. I think a couple people might have started to wonder, what's going on here? But I was really good at hiding it. And for me, I never looked sick. I never looked like the stereotypical, what people would imagine someone with an eating disorder might look like. So I was celebrated for it. Oh, look at her willpower. Oh man, she's doing it. Oh, shredding for the win. Yeah, shredding for the win. Well, like starving for something. I don't know what it was, for some idea that didn't matter. And then, so I think back to that time too, and like so much joy was taken out of the process. Like my wedding dress, when I tried on my wedding dress, I look miserable in the pictures because I was so mad that I wasn't thinner. And there's like nothing to me in the pictures. And I'm standing there in the bridal shop and I got the dress on. I would only go with my mom. I wouldn't let like any of my bridal party go because they didn't want them to see me. And like I think back on that and I'm like, wow, I was just so twisted. And so like I'm grateful for the experience to have learned from it and come out on the other side. But yeah, wow.
Right. Yeah, you're reminding me, because I think when we get a little distant from it, I think it's easy for I'll speak for myself, easy to forget how what I value now is so different. Like the only thing that mattered to me at that time when I was deep in it was like the what the scale said. And it took over my whole life, and as it does for lots of people. Like it's really, whereas now, like I haven't weighed myself now in like 5 years.
No, I haven't in about eight.
Yeah, right. Like it's like,
And I don't care.
yeah, it's always amazing to me how something that felt so like the biggest focus of my life can shift. And I think this is why it's so insidious, because you can't see past it when you're in it. And so you just think that's the whole thing, right? Whereas now I'm like, God, how could I have been so blind? How did I not see this? And da da da. But you're so in it. What started to shift it for you, Teresa? Like what, when did you start to separate from diet culture? How did that happen?
Yeah, I got very lucky, in that I found an eating disorder dietitian, Anna Sweeney, who folks listening may know. She's actually very well known in the eating disorder recovery world. She was just starting to emerge as a leading voice in that space about 8 years ago when I started working with her. And, she's nearby here in the greater Boston area. And I had to jump through some hoops though, 'cause insurance. And I had some really bad experiences. I was assigned a new PCP and I went to the doctor and I saw the nurse practitioner and she was incredibly, I didn't even have words for it. But so I went to her and I was like, okay, I was like ready to come clean, because I knew at this point how out of control it had gotten. And I was willing to admit how sick I was, at least to myself, if not to anybody else. And I decided that I'm going to come clean. I'm going to tell this person all the things I've been doing because I need them to help me. And this woman, she looked at me horrified, first of all, and looked at me like, I don't even know. And then I told her all the things and she looked at me and she goes, wow, and you still couldn't break 200 pounds? And she looked at me with like such disgust. Mind you, I didn't look like I weighed 200 pounds either. Weight is weird like that. But anyway, so I looked at her and I was like, no. And like, I'm telling this woman like really graphic things that should have been like major red flags for a medical professional. Then she says to me, too bad there aren't like fat burning pills still that you could take and or something like. And I'm looking at her, I'm like, is this for, am I being punked right now? Like, what is happening? Luckily, I was in a place at that point to be like, lady, get away from me. I'm just here for a referral to an eating disorder dietitian that I've already identified that I want to work with. She wouldn't do it. She ended up telling me she was going to send me to their eating disorder program, which I told Anna about it because I was communicating with Anna at this time just to kind of get all the paperwork in order. And Anna's like, I have never heard of this. Do not sign up for anything, these people. So I'm like, what am I going to do? I ended up switching back to a previous PCP. So again, more legwork, more pressure on me trying to get help. Go back to my previous PCP and he was fine. He signed the paper with like whatever. And he told me not to eat pasta and to limit my salt intake. I'm like, Cool, doc. Thanks. Thanks for that, bro. Sign the paper. But he did. He did. And I got to work with Anna. And I'll never forget. I was ready to change. Like at that point, I knew. And I just remember, you know, kind of going to her and telling her all the things and her being like, okay, what are you willing to like let go of? And I was willing to let go of it all. Like I wanted to delete. I think I deleted my Fitness Pal after the first day with her. I definitely smashed my scale within a couple of sessions. And I stopped, like, I was willing, and she just held space for me to just be me and to just exist. And at the time, too, I remember being a little annoyed with the process. And I would say, I would tell her this, where I was just like, we're not making any progress. Like, you haven't like given me the answer. Like, what is the answer? You know, she's trying to teach me about intuitive eating and like all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, my mind is being blown and like my entire understanding of my existence is being shattered. And she held that space for me and made it okay to just heal. And I don't even know how long I worked with her for. It was probably wasn't long enough, because then I started a doctoral program and, you know, kind of went on this journey, but still continued obviously to practice and to study intuitive eating and learn about the haze movement and to just start to understand and listen to my body. And it did feel like a complete reset. Like everything I thought I knew really was shattered. And then still, like, you know, watching my mom, who continues to struggle, although she is better now. And I remember even the moment with my mom and her being, me being like, you are ready to read intuitive eating now, like waiting to like get her to that point even. And, you know, her lived experience is obviously different. She grew up in a slightly different time, and I don't know, where maybe access to cute, trendy, plus size clothes weren't necessarily a thing, or like weight neutral healthcare like wasn't talked about. You just did what the doctor said and whatever that was, and all that stuff. So I recognize the lived experience is different, but just, it's just been cool to watch. And I mean, I've never looked back. Like there's no, I do not miss those days. There was nothing there for me in that mindset anymore.
Wow. Well, and kudos to you for doing all that extra labor to get to the support that you knew you needed. And isn't it, this is always mind-blowing to me how the healthcare providers that are supposed to support our seeking help often gatekeep. So that nurse practitioner, the primary care physician, like it, and I think you're probably one of the luckier ones because you knew to keep pushing. Whereas I think a lot of people, I've definitely heard, you know, people have told me like, they get so devastated by that kind of interaction that they then just, they can't do anything else. They can't move forward. They can't go back. They can't fight forward. It's just, it's, oh.
And that's why I think about that nurse practitioner sometimes.
Yeah.
And I wish her well. But I do think that had I been somebody else, and I hope this didn't happen to anybody else going to that practice, I could be dead by listening to her. Like she could have sent me to some bariatric, God knows what, and would have recommended if the Ozempic, whoever you say it, or Wegovy or whatever it is were around back then. I'm sure she would have been like, here you go, girl. And whatever, like I think about, you know, in some alternate universe, some metaverse,
Well, it sounds like she wanted to give you fen-phen or whatever that horrible thing was. It was like, here's some speed. See if that helps. Like, are you
kidding
me? Yeah,
no, she definitely did. Because I just remember looking at her like, this has to be a joke.
I mean, it feels very unethical, but oh my gosh.
She probably felt like she was helping me, I'm sure. No, and I recognize the privilege that comes with being able to push back on that. And, you know, I've always been, I don't know, resilient, shall we say, and strong and a good advocate for myself and others, and especially like somebody, an underdog, and I'll fight for what I believe in. I've always been like that. That did get a little lost in some of the eating disorder days, but it came back with a vengeance.
Yeah, that's so great. Well, and it feels like that's, I mean, I imagine your whole lived experience really informed what you've now become an expert in, which is self-care as rebellion. So tell us a little bit about that work that you do. Take us through this idea of self-care as rebellion.
Yeah. So I love that. And, you know, I do. So the whole idea of the self-care cabaret really does, you know, I've mentioned I have a dance background and I also have a professional performing choreography and theater background. So that's where like self-care cabaret comes from, because it's me, like it's how I show up in the world. I mean, hot pink tassels for those earrings that for those who can't see this, and hot pink shirt and this color all around me. You know, I'm not definitely not a a small presence. At times I can be quite loud and known, but not in an obnoxious way. Like, I don't think I'm ever obnoxious, but maybe some people feel differently. But anyway, okay, so self-care is rebellion. So it comes from this really fantastic quote, which is by Audre Lorde and was said in 1988 as a political rally cry against an oppressive culture. And the quote is as follows: caring for myself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation. And that is an act of political warfare.
Ooh, can you say it again?
Caring for myself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation. And that is an act of political warfare. I know. And I'll be honest, the first time I read it, I'm not sure I totally understood it. But I kept like sitting with it and thinking about it. I opened my dissertation with it. And now I really understand it, especially I think in given what we've gone through as a society in the last couple of years with COVID, with Black Lives Matter, with the just everyday more challenges in the world, watching the education system have its challenges. I mean, that's an oppressive culture, call it what it is, but it is. And it's an oppressive system, I should say. And so many of our systems are. And so I really understand that quote now. And then when I was really studying self-care and kind of the true meaning of self-care, like I'm not an expert in mani-pedis and bubble baths. like I always tell them, like, we're not here to talk about spa days and mani-pedis, but like, no shade. Like, I love a good spa day or a mani-pedi. But we're really talking about the practices that you do on a consistent basis at the foundational level. So you show up as the best version of yourself. And to do that takes really getting in touch with who you are and what makes you tick, really. And I always think about self-care as a foundation. And if you have a foundation of a house, for example, and it's cracked, weak, wobbly, not taken care of, your house probably isn't going to last very long. If you have a strong foundation of self-care, you can stand tall on that foundation. And it almost can create a bit of a protective bubble around you. It won't make, you know, stress go away. Like, stress, life, things are still going to happen. But you're able to push back and react better from a strong position on your foundation. So that's what allows you to push back kind of against that oppressive culture, that idea of self-preservation. But it's not, you know, when I say it's a rebellion, it's not, or it's a resistance. You know, society isn't going to be like, yay, clap, round of applause, you took care of yourself today, good for you. No. What do we get instead? We feel guilty if we take a sick day. We take guilty, feel guilty. We take paid time off, our earned time off. We feel guilty if we say no, or maybe disappoint someone because we had to back out of something they asked us to do. Or we just feel guilty for so much, and society feeds on that. And it makes me crazy. So when you decide to honor yourself and put yourself first, that's a rebellion, because you're rebelling against the norm and what society wants you to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And so take us deeper into self-care, because like you said, this is not mani-pedis, spa days. Again, no shade to those because they're fabulous, but you're talking about something much deeper. So what is that? What is deeper self-care?
So this comes from Dr. Catherine Cook Cotton and her work, which I studied extensively in the doctoral program. And I just love her framework for self-care. So I do kind of frame a lot of my workshops and a lot of my work kind of around her 10 domains. And then, of course, put my own Dr. MC spin on it and my own lived experience in it and how I interpret them and how I promote them and how I practice them. But when we look at the 10 domains, we're looking at things first, and they're in no order of importance. They're just 10 domains. The first one is nutrition and hydration. We have to eat. You have to drink water. You have to hydrate. But how we do that, and the piece that I add into this when I present on it, is really starting to talk about that intuitive eating at its most basic level, which is, you know, honoring your hunger and fullness, which we know it's a much broader framework that gets into much more, but at its most basic distilled level, to kind of that piece. And I always talk about that in my presentations too, because I want people to see me for who I am. I also often disclose that I'm in recovery for multiple eating disorders, because I want people to understand, because I share that it's an area I struggle with. And so I like to kind of create that empathy and that safe space for folks. But we look at that. So we look at nutrition and hydration, first domain. Then we look at exercise, or as I prefer to call it, joyful movement, because exercise sometimes gets warped up in that diet culture, burning calories as a method to shrink your body mentality. And that's not what we're talking about. So I do like to talk about joyful movement and not sitting for long periods of time and just doing things that make you feel good in your body. So whatever that is, if that's maybe doing a little dance while you're loading the dishwasher, or taking a walk around the building at work, or parking further away just to get in some more movement. Not with an end goal of burning calories, though. Then we look at soothing strategies. And this is where we look at, you know, some maybe deep breathing practices, even using smells or sounds or other tactile sensations to kind of calm your body. You know, I was reading an article recently in the New York Times, which I found quite upsetting. It was a statistic from a recent study that adults 35 to 50 had a significant increase in maladaptive coping mechanisms. People don't know how to cope anymore.
I agree with that.
And the other piece was women in that same age group. I think that the deaths, alcohol-related deaths for women, have like doubled in the last, I forget the amount of years. It was some crazy, and this was like a legitimate thing in like the New York Times. And it just made me so sad. I'm like, people don't know how to, like, people anymore. We don't know how to care. People don't know how to care for themselves. And it just made me really sad, but it reminded me how important this work is. So thank you for giving me a platform to share. But so we need to figure out what our coping mechanisms are to help us cope, where we don't necessarily have to turn to something else to kind of take the edge off. You know, I think there's a time and a place, certainly for enjoying a glass of wine or whatever it is. But when that becomes, you know, the sole coping mechanism, I think is where we get into trouble. Then we look at self-awareness and mindfulness. So again, really getting in touch with what makes you you, your thoughts, your feelings, your actions, what's going on there, and practicing mindfulness. So practicing those things that help keep us in the moment, grounded in our bodies, because we're disconnected. We're running around. We're on autopilot too much of the time. The next domain is rest, an often neglected one. Did you know you should feel rested and restored when you wake up in the morning, Sophia?
I really did. I used to. I'm on some medication now, and I'm also perimenopausal, which is really messing with my sleep in a way. I always had great sleep. So I have a new appreciation for people who struggle with sleep. Yeah. But yeah, I know I'm supposed to.
Yeah. But I mean, we just take it. We take it for granted. I have people that are like, oh, I can survive. I'm fine with like 5 hours of sleep. I'm like, I don't think you are. So I never sacrifice sleep as much as humanly, like I'm a granny. Like my husband and I were in bed. Like this is past my bedtime now, Sophia. I'm just letting you know. And I'm scared. We're recording at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and I'm ready for bed. No, seriously. It's just, you know, because I get up early and I get a lot going on. So I always try to prioritize my sleep. But that's a really important domain. The next domain is relationships. We need people in our lives to support us, encourage us, believe in us, respect us, people that stand up for us if we, you know, say no or whatever it is. I am blessed in that domain, I will say, with my husband and my mom, my two closest, and I have some close friends as well. But that does really make a huge difference. So if folks don't have that, I do strongly encourage, you know, finding community, finding folks, like-minded individuals, a clinician, a therapist, a group, whatever, to work with folks. So that relationship domain is, they're all super important, but that one particularly.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of the book, I think it's called Together by Vivek Murthy, who was the U.S. Surgeon General under Obama. And he did a whole, it was fascinating. I read the book years ago, but he basically like did this whole tour of the U.S. kind of to get a sense of what are the things that are causing, you know, poor health outcomes for U.S. citizens. Well, that was what he found. He was like, he was expecting heart attack. He was expecting the O word, you know, he was expecting all this stuff. And what he found was it was a lack of belonging.
Yeah. That is like the number one thing. Even for kids in school, like I'm constantly, because I give a lot of workshops to teachers and educators, and I'm like, that sense of belonging is so important. I had an Instagram post about that. There was an update to that work. The loneliness, there was just a recent article because I shared a statistic and a quote, and it was, and I think it was him, and he equated, loneliness to like smoking two packs of cigarettes a day or something absurd as like being equally as bad for your health.
Well, which is so interesting because that is an emotional state rather than a physical ailment, right? Like the fact that that state of loneliness, that feeling of not belonging. Well, and it's interesting. So I do the bulk of my work is as a leadership coach for different corporations around the world, different organizations. And what is so interesting is like if you look at employee net promoter score, so basically like how employees are feeling at work, the number one indicator of retention is the answer in the affirmative to I have a best friend at work. So again, that sense of belonging for both adults, for children, for all of us, like is so integral to our wellness. And I feel like the challenges we're often more siloed than ever now. And
people always think it's money. Why people quit jobs. It's money. It's not always money.
No, it's so true. Yeah, I love that you brought relationships in and that sense of being like being seen as who you are, not fake superficial relationships, like actual, where you get to show up and be loved for who you are. Oh, it's such a gift to have that. So I'm so glad this is part of it.
I am very blessed. And, you know, going back to the kind of healing journey for a second, I was worried as my body was changing in ways I wasn't prepared for. The weight came on like a vengeance when I kind of was ready to let it go so fast. And before I was having to buy new clothes and I was newly married at this point. I mean, I've been with my husband for several years prior, but never in a larger body. And I was concerned. I was like, oh my God, like, he's still going to love me. Not that he ever said anything or gave me any indication. As a matter of fact, quite the opposite. But I had it in, I remember having that fear. And we talked about it. We've always been great communicators. And he's like, I fell in love with a person, not a body. Like, what are you talking about? Oh, he's so super cute. I could make a ton of money if I could clone him. But even just getting to that, but then being okay with that, you know what I mean? Like it was a lot. So relationships are very important. And I hope folks listening have strong relationships or if not, are willing to take the steps to find that community because it's important. Sophia's creating it with her work. I'm creating community in my work. We're happy to be part of anybody's community that needs that support. So then the next domain, this is a fun one. Physical, medical, because we know, especially living in a larger body, going to the doctors is super fun. But we kind of have to do it. It's important to engage in that preventative health care. You know, I don't know where folks listening are from. I'm in the greater Boston area. Again, privilege and access to a lot of different providers, a lot of different options here. I was able to switch PCPs pretty easily and get what I needed in that story I told. I recognize in some parts of the country, some parts of the world, that might not be an option. But if it is an option, it is worth it to find those folks. And the woman that I work with now as a primary care is pretty good. Every now and again, like, I'll see something about, like, maybe lose weight or, like, you know, eat. Like, in my, I just went to her a few weeks ago, and I saw, like, a little note and, like, the printout stuff. It's probably just like I think it's something that goes in, like, everybody's, like, info. And it said something like, make sure you're eating a diet of fruits and vegetables. Like, thanks. Like, get out of here. But even then, like, she never asked me about weight. She didn't ask me about exercise. She didn't ask me any of these things when I was in the doctor's, and I did decline to be weighed. And this was kind of funny. So I go in, of course, now I go in and I'm like, you know, ready. I'm like, come on, go ahead. What you got? And, the woman's like, oh, can you get on the scale? And I'm like, oh, no, I'd actually prefer not to be weighed today. And she's like, oh, well, what does your home scale say? And I just looked at her. I go, I don't have a scale at home, nor do I need to know what it says. And also, I'm in recovery for multiple eating disorders, so I'd rather not have this conversation right now. And she just looked, then of course she looked at me like I just threw, you know, cold water on her face. She's like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. Then she proceeds to tell me some other things that I didn't need to know about her own life and her own journey. But I think she was trying to, like, relate to me. And I was okay. I'm like, you're fine. You're just trying to make herself feel better, I think, because I think she felt a little bad. But I'm like, it's fine. And, you know, we went on, and then that was it. Like, it wasn't mentioned again. I wasn't made to feel bad. Nothing. It was awesome. So it does help when you can access, you know, weight neutral, medical professionals. So, you know, that's the physical medical domain. That gets tricky. But again, important. Then we look at self-compassion, which is, you know, we tend to be just so hard on ourselves. So this is really just understanding that setback and challenge are part of the human experience. And lucky for us, everyone else is human also. So we're all going to experience it to some level. Then we look at the environment, your environmental domain. And this is interesting too, because, you know, our brains are so amazing and wonderful and do so many cool things, but your brain can't tell the difference in a space that's cluttered and chaotic and disorganized. It signals to your brain that there's work to do. So you can't relax in a space like that. So if your environments are chaos and disorganized and cluttered, and that's going to actually make your brain think there's work to do. So you're not going to be able to relax. So I think about that with all spaces we inhabit, our homes, our offices, our classrooms, our cars. I've seen some cars that, like, you know, there's like the little circle in the front and that's all the driver can see. Like, there is just stuff everywhere. And I'm looking at you, Sophia. You have a beautiful background with the books are color coded and organized. That's next level. I love it. But having, like, just keeping up with things, and I've struggled in this domain too, where my husband calls me a low key hoarder. I like to think of myself more as a collector. But a lot of interest. I have my theater stuff, my Dr. MC stuff, my school stuff, my this stuff, costumes, like art supplies, like so much, like stuff. And I've worked really hard at, like, letting things go. And yeah, I actually did a huge purge in the room that I'm recording in now, and reimagined it in an I Dream a Genie bottle style. But it had gotten so bad, we could barely walk in the room. Like, and this is the second bedroom. This is kind of a storage space / my self-care space / where I perform, where I do my own podcast, where, like, it's just a lot going on in this room. But now it's awesome. But it took a little bit to get here. So that's the environmental domain. And then last but certainly not least is the spiritual domain. So this is where we want to set goals and see, like, meaning for ourselves and in our life, and that we have purpose. And so sometimes that might look like you know, spending time in a spiritual place, whatever that may mean to folks, and everyone might have a different answer for what that means. Or it's even volunteering for something, maybe a soup kitchen, stuff like that. Like that kind of starts to get into the environmental domain. So that is a really quick overview of the 10 domains of self-care. So definitely more in-depth than mani-pedis.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so holistic. I love how fulsome those 10 are. I want to ask some questions about a few of them, but first I want to ask you, what do you think, and maybe there's not an answer, I don't know, but what do you think is the hardest one for people?
Oh, I think it really depends. I think it really depends on a lot of factors. I would say, off the top of my head, as I predominantly talk to educators and helping professionals, so I would say they tend to score really well in spiritual domain because they know that their work is important.
Yeah, they're like living on purpose. They feel firm in that. Yeah.
They know they're there for kids or to help patients or clients or whatever it is. They kind of got that under control. I would say it comes down to self-compassion and rest as probably... But I think it also depends. But I would say those are probably two major pain points for folks that often come up.
Yeah. I was kind of, as you were talking through it, I was thinking, you know, what would my audience of listeners say they struggle with? And I pulled out three that I thought might be interesting to go a little deeper into. And I'm making a huge assumption about who's listening to this. But I think it's useful regardless, these three things. So I was thinking about the soothing piece, the soothing mechanisms, self-compassion, and also the spiritual purpose domains. Those three for me stuck out as... just even from the work that I do as a coach, I feel like these are the ones that often get neglected, or that people, like when you talked about soothing mechanisms, I was like, oh yeah, no one knows how to do that for themselves. Like I do that work with people daily. I was talking to someone in the Air Force today and I was helping him like find ways to just manage emotions, like in a soothing, and then also the mindfulness piece. Like it was just amazing. Like, people are just so disconnected. No.
Oh, and sometimes I'll say to people, you know, what did you do as a kid that brought you joy?
Ooh, that's a great question.
What was something you did as a, how can we reconnect back to that? And, you know, sometimes that works for folks. I think we overthink it too. And I think we forget that, like, as adults, you can color. You can dance. Like, you can heal that inner child. You can do... something silly. You should do something silly. I mean, I work in a school, so I can be silly all the time. I work in an elementary school. Like today I was belting out, You'll Be Back from Hamilton with a fifth grader, because why not? And I knew I could bait him. I just said one line and then we were yelling out the school, the rest of the lyrics. I mean, that's what some adults, maybe they take themselves too seriously. We tend to, you know, we take ourselves too seriously. We worry what other people are going to think, and we're afraid to find joy.
Yeah, it's so true. I so resonate with this. I did this whole, like 2015, this whole year-long leadership development program. And one of the biggest challenges for me was I was the first or second, like, you know, retreat that we did. And it was the concept of being messy. And that word even, I was like, I can't be messy. I must be professional and put together. And I think my fatness plays into this, because if I'm a messy fat person, then what does that say about me? That must mean that I am all the horrible stereotypes that are given to fat people. I am therefore lazy. I am sloppy. I am like all of this. It was so wrapped up because I'm curious about how all of these intersect with fatness, right? Like living in a fat body. And I know for me, the messy one, and even things like self-compassion, for so many years, I was like, I don't deserve self-compassion. I'm still fat.
Right. Because we wrapped our worth up in that.
Yeah. I haven't earned it. I haven't earned self-compassion if this is what my body looks like, right? These horrible things we say to ourselves.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I would also say another difficult area is relationships. And I add boundaries. When I talk about relationship domain, I do talk a lot about setting boundaries. That's incredibly important for people. And actually, that's something I needed to learn to fix in recovery, because I remember telling Anna one day in a session, I remember like pretty much vividly all my time with her. It was so special. But she asked me if I was good at saying no. And I was like, yeah, I'm like, I got at saying no. And she was like, I bet you're not, actually. And I just remember being like, she just called me out on my bullshit. And I remember thinking about it. And then, you know, as time went on, being like, oh yeah, no, I'm not good at it. Like, I would just like, I have, because I have so many interests and so many things, like people would ask me, oh, you want to choreograph this show? Do you want to do this? And I'd be like, yeah, let me do. And not anymore. I still do a ton now, but I'm always like weighing the priorities. I'm always like, okay, is this getting me further to my goals? Is this a want or a need, or is this a should? Like, what is this? What is this request? And I have to be really careful too with my job. I work as an administrator. Education, as a lot of professions will do, will take everything you're willing to give it. So if you're willing to give it all of you, it's going to take it. It's just going to suck it right up. So for me, like, I push back on different things, and I'm part of the leadership team, and I'll be like, nope, I leave at this time. Nope. What's okay? I worked an extra day. I'm taking this day. Or like over the summer, I'm supposed to work 10 days, and, which is fine, whatever. But it's like, once I hit my 10 days and my boss is still emailing me wanting to schedule a call, it's like, no, I'm so sorry. We hit our 10 days. So how are we going to make this work? I mean, I'm not unreasonable about it, but I know that there've been comments made, and I'm kind of known as the administrator with strong boundaries, and I love it. Like, my principal, even she loves it too. And I think I've helped her in some ways, but there was another administrator one time last year who was like, oh, just tell Teresa she can call me at, like, I'll be home all weekend. Like, you know, Sunday night would be great. And my principal was like, I am not telling her to do that, because she's not going to do that, and I'm not going to put her in that position. She'll talk to you Monday morning. And I was like, thank you. Like, and it wasn't anything that needed to be talked about. Like, no, nobody's life was on the line. This wasn't like an emergency. No need. But that's what we do. Like, we give and give and give.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and organizations take and take and take. Like, right? Like, this is so common. I was literally in a meeting this morning with Firefly, the creative writing studio that I'm a part of, and we were talking about this, and the founder mentioned and that we do these, what we call lights out weeks, 3 times a year, where we fully close down. We don't teach any classes. We don't see any clients. We don't send emails. Like, we are lights out. And I am one of those people. I'm getting so much better. This is a couple of years ago, and I wasn't quite where I am now, where I was like, oh no, I'm going to be working during lights out week. So if I send emails, no need to respond. And then the founder, Chris, said to the whole team, all 10 of us, she said, look, everyone, if Sophia sends you an email, delete it immediately without reading it. And then she looked at me and I was like, oh, you what? And it was like the wake up call I needed. I had never had anyone take a stand for my rest before. And that's what she did. She was like, no, I am going to honor your rest and ask everyone on this team to help you because I had a problem. And so
that's a good leader.
It was amazing. She's the best. I learned so much from her. And like, I think about that all the time, probably at least once a week, when I try to be sneaky with myself and overcommit.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and I love that the principal was like, yeah, I'm not telling that to Teresa. Monday morning's fine. Like, why? Why would we do Sunday night when we can do Monday morning?
No, there's no need. There is no need. And my husband is also, this is where relationships, positive relationships can really help too, with setting boundaries. Because sometimes, you know, I come home from work and I'll want to spiral about work. Like, it's just, you know, I had a rough day. Something was busy. I work a complicated job. I was a special ed administrator. And, you know, sometimes I'll come home and I'll just feel like I just want to continue to talk about work. And he'll say to me, All right, we're done. We're done with work talk now. And I'll be like, well, tell me about your day. And he's like, my day started when I got home and we're together. He's like, that's what I want to talk about. And I'm just like, oh, fine, I wrote it. No, he's the best. I'm telling you, this is a multi-million dollar idea if we can clone him. No, but it's just, yeah. But even like, so my mom is recently retired, but she also worked for the same school district that I'm a part of. So when we were overlapped, I'd find ourselves like in the pool and it's summer, like both of us are off and we'd just be like, work stuff. And my husband would be like, we're done here. Push the both of us back. Like, just put up that boundary and kind of snap us out of our heads. And then at first I remember my mom being like, who's he talking to? And then, but then realizing like, oh yeah, why are we talking about this? Like, there's other things we could talk about.
That's powerful. So those boundaries, that is part of the relationship domain.
I put it in relationships because I think that's where it belongs when we think about, because we all want to do things for the people we love and care about. We do. And, you know, but we have to make sure that we're honoring ourselves first in that process. And that doesn't mean that, you know, sometimes we might do something that isn't ideal or whatever. But generally speaking, we want to have, you know, flexible, but also firm boundary, like leaving work on time, not checking email after hours, not sending emails during lights out time, like things like that. And, you know, I read a quote recently. It was on a meme or something. And it was like, the only people in 20 years from now, the only people that are going to remember you work 60 to 80 hours a week is your family.
Yes. Oof.
Yeah, I know. Ouch.
That is an ouch. I feel a little attacked.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Sophia.
No, I get it. I work on this constantly.
I know. It's hard. And I still probably do too much with all the Dr. MC stuff too, but that's my spiritual domain. That's my passion right there.
That's how I feel about the podcast. Same thing. I'm like, oh, but that's not something I can say no to. Yeah.
I want to be doing this work full time. I want to be helping people in this capacity full time and to really teaching people to have those healthy coping mechanisms and to honor themselves and to advocate for themselves and to just take care of themselves, because life is short and we don't need to make it worse and more complicated.
It's so true. I'm curious about the self-compassion domain, because I feel like this is something that certainly most people I talk to really struggle with self-compassion. Again, it's one of those things that, even though it's a birthright, I feel like it gets taken away from us pretty quickly. And if we have, what I've heard people say is, well, if I give myself compassion, then I'm like colluding with laziness or bad behavior or passivity. Like, self-compassion gets mixed up with hustle culture's negative, what hustle culture views as negative. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a really interesting one. Tell us a bit more about it.
Yeah, that's where that inner critic voice can emerge. And that's tricky. And that's definitely, you have to learn to hear that voice, to kind of understand it and recognize that it's happening, so you can talk back to it from a place of self-compassion.
So what does that sound like? Like, could you take us through?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an example. So a lot of times, well, I'll use that rest example that I shared a little while ago. We'll go a little deeper into that. So I had a gig in the morning. I got home. I found myself with like 3 extra hours potentially that I could have spent. I wanted to. My plan was to dive into more Dr. MC work. I'm trying to put together some online courses. Hopefully by the time this podcast airs, they'll be up and running. But I wanted to, you know, I had this plan. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I got the house to myself. It's quiet. I'm going to get this done. I had makeup done, hair done. Everything was good. But instead, and so in that moment, I had a choice when I got home, right? To either go do the Dr. MC stuff, but I was able to hear the voice in me that was saying, you don't feel 100%. You need to rest. Now, there could have been another voice that emerged, but I've done a good job of quieting that other voice. But there possibly could have been the, you know, the good angel, the bad angel, kind of the devil and the angel thing, where another voice could have emerged being like, oh, you're so lazy. You're never going to get these courses done. You're so stupid. Just go and do these courses. What's wrong with you? Why can't you get this done? Everybody else has courses. Why can't, like, that voice could have come up. It didn't, or if it did, I paid it no attention. It was a whisper. So I heard that louder voice, but this is healing and doing this work and knowing that it's okay to do that and having the support to do that and understanding that, you know, there's privilege that comes with that, that I can do this tomorrow. It's not a big deal. Or I can do it 2 weeks from now. Or I can say, you know what? I'm not doing it at all. Like, I have that. I'm in control of this. So I was able to honor that voice that was like, you need to take a nap. Like, you need to just lay down. And like I said, even at first, I was like, okay, 10 minutes. So I'll lay down. And I laid down, and a couple hours later, I woke up and was like, okay, but that's because I listened to that self-compassion voice and was able to honor it.
Yeah. Well, and I find like the inner critic voice is so much louder and often angrier than the self-compassion voice. So for people who haven't done a lot of inner critic work or self-compassion work, when that voice comes up, that inner critic voice, and let's say they recognize it, do you have like a tool or a tip for what to do in that moment?
Yeah, I mean, talking back to it. Like, if you hear that inner critic voice say something like, I don't know, you're not worthy, or you're ugly, or you're something, like whatever it is, to be able to talk back to it, you know, either internally or externally, and be like, no, I know this isn't right. I know this isn't true. And then whatever you have as kind of evidence also that you can use, like I'll find myself kind of, I don't know, I have like a greatest hits reel that I can kind of play in my head where I can remind myself of all the amazing, awesome things I've accomplished and so many things I'm proud of and so many things I have to be grateful for. And it just quiets that voice right down. But I think that comes with practice.
I think so too. That's definitely been my experience with myself and with clients, is like, it's a muscle that you build. It's like you learn how to turn down the volume of the inner critic and increase the volume of your, I call it like my inner wise one or my inner ally, or like that other part of you, that softer, quieter, inner, like compassionate voice.
You can raise the volume on that for sure. And actually, I just mentioned gratitude. Gratitude is something that I kind of put into the self-awareness mindfulness domain and talk a lot about that. There is actual research, like the science, to support that when you practice gratitude, it rewires neural pathways in your brain to help boost your mood, improve your happiness, and improve relationships. And like, why wouldn't we practice gratitude? Like, that's so cool. And, you know, but a lot of us, we just run crazy from so many things, this, that, and the other thing, and responsibility to responsibility, that we take so much for granted. And that's another really powerful practice that can really help, I think, play into that self-compassion and help raise the volume on that good witch voice, or whatever you want to call it, voice. Because, you know, when you really take a step back and just think about all that we really have to be grateful for, and in whatever that looks like, it looks different for different folks, but, you know, even just having the ability to listen to a podcast is kind of cool, right? Having the ability to listen to people talk and share their lived experiences, and maybe feel like that sense of belonging, that there's other people out there that have also had similar lived experiences. I mean, that's powerful.
Yeah, agree. Totally agree. And I want to ask you about spiritual. I wrote spiritual / purpose because, again, when I talk to people, a lot of them feel very disconnected from a sense of purpose. Do you have, again, another, like, give us a tool. Tell us what, like, if someone's listening going like, oh, yeah, I don't know I don't know if I even believe in purpose. I don't know what my purpose would be. I just feel like I run, like you said, like I'm on the hamster wheel. I just run from thing to thing, day to day, soccer for the kids, home, make lunches, bed, exhausted, wake up, exhausted, da da da. Start again.
Rinse, repeat.
It feels like a luxury to take a moment to think about purpose. So how do we do that? What's one way?
Yeah, I mean, journaling can be a great tool here. Journaling can be a great tool for a lot of the domains. Meditation, also short guided meditations. I'm a big fan of those. But a tool that I really use in the spiritual domain that may or may not resonate with your listeners is actually a vision board. Like I like to get really clear on my goals and that helps me see my purpose. I was actually recently cited in a Today Show article on vision boards as an expert. I was like, well, that's fun. Because I love them. And I go like, I know this is shocking, Sophia, but I'm extra in my vision board. And I whipped out my Canva skills this year and was like putting myself in like Vogue magazine cover, like whatever. I was doing all kinds of wild things because why not? Right? Why not dream big and just, but you don't have to go like all extra and get into Canva and all that. That's like, that's not necessary. So if we take it back to a more basic level, you're just trying to get clear on what it is you want and how do you want to feel. And I think that can help guide you in the spiritual domain. And, you know, get outside in nature. See if how that feels to your body. Spend time in a spiritual place, whatever you interpret that to mean. Take time out to maybe help someone else. Where does that feel like to you? And how is that something that you enjoy? So how do we bring more of that in? And I think, you know, I love to set goals and I love to achieve them. So vision boards, I'm very visual. So that visual representation really helps me. I've been making vision boards for years. And I just find it as a really good tool to help us.
I love that. Yeah. And there's so many ways to do vision boards. I've done them with Pinterest, where I just grab images. And I will say, actually, I realized a couple of days ago, I was like, oh, I don't think I've been dreaming enough. And so I was like, I need to get back, because I've been very in the doing, which is kind of my natural state. So I have to remember to pull myself out and remember to dream, to connect to desire. So I actually did a very simple version. It's not even a vision board, but I'm just going to hold up a little like cute little notebook that I have. It's a little tiny. And I literally wrote the top, doing some dreaming. And then I just wrote some ideas down. So for people listening, like cutting up magazines or doing Canva or Pinterest, it doesn't even have to be, you literally could just write on a post-it note, like three things that you're longing for, that you're desiring or that you're craving. And that gets to be your dream, you know?
If it's not things, feelings.
Yes, exactly.
Like, the feeling you want? And you know, another practice, I was just reminded of another great practice. You like tools, Sophia, so I'm giving you more tools. This comes from Cheryl Richardson, which actually I believe it's a Louise Hay thing. But the mirror challenge. So, and this is really great for, self-love and self-care and just feeling good in your body. And so especially maybe folks that are struggling with their body image or whatnot or appearance, to look yourself in the mirror every single day in the morning, whenever, and just say, I love you, Teresa, or I love you, and insert your name. You can say I love you, Teresa, but I don't think it'll have the same impact. But really look at yourself in the mirror and say it. And at first, you're going to be like, this is super awkward. I don't like this at all. It's uncomfortable. It's awkward. But you'll notice if you stick with it after, you know, a few days, it starts to get easier and then it starts to feel good. Mm-hmm. And that can really help us just kind of tune back in to ourselves. I mean, I don't know. We just make things so hard for ourselves. Well, society makes it hard, but we don't help that sometimes either.
No. Well, it's the waters that we're swimming in. I feel like so much of this work, self-care work, deeper self-knowledge work, is about removing the layers that have been put on us. Like all the unlearning we have to do. And it is, it's like, oh God, no, it's not. It's not easy. It's not pretty, And it's so worth it. Like, I would never go back to Sophia of 10 years ago. And just, no, I love that I, again, from a place of privilege, have been able to do a lot of work on myself and understand, you know, my woundedness and my inner child and like all of these things that have shifted how I operate completely in the world and how I view other people too. Yeah, it's worth it. Yeah.
One of the things I've started doing, and it has become like my favorite part of the week, because I mentioned, you know, I grew up dancing and that got all kind of twisted up in the eating disorder behavior, and I kind of lost sight of it there for a little while, because I almost, when I entered the healing, it was almost like a complete reset. And I was almost afraid to exercise for a while. And that might sound silly, but exercise was one of my main purging methods. So I almost didn't know how to move my body without it being a goal to burn calories. Like, it was really, it took me a while to like unravel all of those pieces. And I have to say that it continues to get better. And over the past year, I have been feeling a strong pull really back to dancing. And so I'm like, you know what? F this, I'm doing it. So I even went as far as to buy point shoes last summer. And because I used to dance on point. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to be auditioning for the Sugar Plum Fairy anytime soon. It just even felt, even to go through the process of doing a fitting and purchasing the point shoes, and even, I haven't done much with them, I'll be honest, but even just having them in my presence has like made me feel like I've reclaimed just a little bit of that space for myself and starting to carve out just a little bit. And furthering that, you know, I want to move my body more because it makes me feel good. I don't care if it has any other benefits to it. That's not what I'm trying to do or anything else about it. I just like how I feel after I move my body. So I've started hosting what I call dance breaks with Dr. MC, which are joyful movement dance parties for all bodies. So because my schedule is a little wacky, they're not like consistent. Like, it's not every whatever at whatever time, but I've been hosting them at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I've been able to have one a week. I'm offering them for free, with, you know, donations are accepted if the spirit moves folks, but, that's not the point. I'm not trying to retire off of dance breaks, although if it was to happen, I'd be cool with it. And it's really just an accessible movement space. I give a lot of modifications. You know, I tone things down. I amp things up. I'm kind of see what's virtual, but I can kind of see what people are doing if they need me to like repeat a movement or kind of, I don't know, just make it comfortable and safe and accessible. Like, we start, we use chairs, we have chairs to do our warm up. The 30 minutes flies by and it has been like the coolest thing. I'm obsessed with it.
Oh my gosh, that is so fun, Teresa. I mean, we're absolutely going to link to that so people can find it. I think that's such a great example of everything that you stand for and the work that you're doing
and
in the world.
I hope to add more. Like, I've had people, you know, be like, oh, you know, would you do other ones? Like maybe a lightweight training one or even just like a gentle stretching one. But like, we'll see. Maybe by the time this airs, I'll have more going on. But for right now, and I'm also trying to figure out a way, and hopefully this will be up and running by the time folks are listening to this, but a way for folks to access the recordings where maybe they pay a small fee and can access the recordings, just because these platforms cost me money to get up and running. It's kind of crazy to try and be an entrepreneur, but that's a different podcast episode. You know, just trying to make it so more folks can do it. And like, I've had, you know, folks in all sorts of bodies and seemingly excited to be there. And just, I had one woman, she's like, oh my goodness, like, I'm in PT for an injury. She's like, this made me feel so good. She's like, why am I not doing this? Like, this is better than the exercises the PT has given me. Like, I feel much better. And like, somebody told me it's the best kept secret in fitness. And I was like, it's having a lot of, and like, the point is that it's a safe space, because I know that in a larger body, sometimes going into those traditional fitness spaces are not welcoming spaces. I don't mention calories or weight loss, nothing. We don't talk about anything like that. That's not why we're there. And so I just think it's, I don't know. I'm really enjoying
it. Oh, I love it. I'm so excited to share that with everyone. I think that's amazing. Teresa, let's talk about joy. How do you connect to joy?
Dancing is a major way. We were just talking. It just makes me feel good. I don't know. It's just definitely that inner child work. I mean, I've been dancing since I was 3, and it just always just brings me back to myself. Other things that bring me joy are helping people. Like, I love to, you know, I kind of realized a couple of years back when I was giving a presentation on self-care, pretty big at a big conference, at a local university. And it went really good. Like, I felt like I was just nailing it. And, it was, like I said, it was an early one. And I remember calling my mom afterwards because I finally made the connection that this was just a really roundabout way to perform still. Cause I stand up in front of people and I help them and I talk to them and I can make jokes and laugh and get them up and moving. And it's essentially a performance. And I made that connection and I was like, wow, yeah, this makes sense. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So that gives me an incredible amount of joy to work with people in that capacity. And then I would say also spending time with my loved ones, my husband and my mom and friends. And
yeah, amazing. Well, this has been such a rich conversation. Thank you so much, Teresa. I have loved this. Thank you for so generously sharing about the 10 domains, and people can take a listen. And I almost feel like, I don't want to use this word, but I don't know what other word to use. You were going through it. I was like doing a little self audit, you know? Oh, this one I got. Ooh, okay, pay attention to this one. I need to do some.
There is like a whole assessment you can take that Dr. Cook Catherine has on her website. I can send you the link to that because folks can take that. I mean, that does come from her research. As I said, I kind of take it my own Dr. MC spin on it. And add some other stuff, but I will have folks take the assessment a lot of times. So then we can talk about their strengths and weaknesses. And, folks are always, but don't make, if you do it, the only thing I want to say is don't let it make you feel bad. It's just a starting point. It's just data. It's just a way to begin. And the good news is you can pick one small thing and see, it'll have a dramatic impact. You don't have to do all 10 domains every single day and all of that. And that's an important piece to mention too. Like, little things actually go a long way when we're talking about the self-care domain. So that's a huge takeaway for folks. I want to make sure that we drive that home. And of course, to dive deeper, you know, follow me on social media, check out my podcast. We're always talking about self-care and different aspects. As a compliment to Sophia's work, certainly, come on over to the Self-Care Cabaret. We'd love to have you.
Yay. Amazing. Thank you, Teresa. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Before we go, I'd like to read a poem, because poetry can reach our hearts in a different way. Poems can have us feel in a different way. And that's what this podcast is all about. Expanding our hearts, deepening our empathy, and inviting in joy. So each week, you get a new poem.
I love Teresa's energy and joy and trust that we can move through life with a little more ease by being intentional about self-care. So I chose a poem by Mark Strand called The Coming of Light, because it reminds me that it's never too late for love to show up. Here it is. Even this late it happens, the coming of love, the coming of light. You wake and the candles are lit as if by themselves. Stars gather, dreams pour into your pillows, sending up warm bouquets of air. Even this late, the bones of the body shine, and tomorrow's dust flares into breath.
Thank you for joining me today. My hope is that you're feeling a little less alone and a little more seen. So until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at fatjoy.life, on YouTube at youtube.com/@fatjoy, and on Substack at fatjoy.substack.com. And please do check out the episode notes for how you can connect with my amazing guest and for the links to the poem. All right, lovely. I am sending you off with my best wishes for an abundantly fat joy day. and we'll talk again soon.